is basically our point guard, two guard, guarding their power forward, and he says, get that out of here. Brown, with two, stands down onto the Kumpo. 5 remaining. Tatum drives down.
And welcome to the Celtics Pulse Podcast, part of the Pulse Podcast Network. Before we get started, let's do a little housekeeping. We have a promo with Thrive Fantasy. It's a fantasy betting app using prop bets covering all major sports. The link is in our bio. Use that link and double your first deposit. Free money. Check it out. And be sure to use our promo code and enjoy a new spin on your fantasy sports experience. Also, check us out on Podcoin. Podcoin is a new app that lets you earn cash by listening to all of your favorite podcasts. Earn points for every 10 minutes of listening and use those points earning towards your purchases like gift cards and other prizes. Be sure to check out Podcoin. Recap the free and reap the free benefits of listening to your favorite podcast over there on Podcoin. So before we get started, we have a special guest, our good friend Fachi, who is a co-host of Setting the Pace podcast, an Indiana Pacers podcast. How are we doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, but I could be doing better. Maybe just as good as you guys are doing after that game one victory. But hey, thanks for having me on the show. I'm excited to talk some Pacers Celtics basketball with you guys today.
Of course, and joining me, we have Tim and John, some familiar faces here on the Celtics Pulse podcast.
Howdy.
What's going on, everybody?
All right, so obviously, like Fachi said, he could be doing as good as we are right now. Celtics take game one in the Garden. Game two is Tuesday, I believe? Question mark? Confirmed?
Wednesday.
I remember that was like 3 days or 2 days rest or whatever. So, Wednesday, we will see game two. Game one was a defensive slugfest, to say the least, or a lack of offense, if you will. 84-75 around that range.
84-74.
Look at that, 84-74. So, not a lot of offense. So, Fachi, tell us about the game. What did your Pacers do right? What did they do wrong? And how can they probably get a win against the Celtics? Hopefully not Wednesday.
Well, when you say what did we do right, it's not too much, but from a defensive standpoint, we did do some great things because this was actually the first game all year that the Celtics won when scoring under 100 points. So if you're going to hang your hat on something, I thought that that's one thing to do it on. The Pacers did a great job of kind of limiting Kyrie Irving. In the previous four games that the Pacers and Celtics played, Kyrie Irving shot over 50% in all four of those games. In this game, down to 35% when he went 6 of 17. So I thought there was a couple different things on the defensive side. Like, you know, Jaylen Brown, rough game shooting the ball, but I thought he did some great things defensively, which I'm sure we'll get down to. But, oh man, offensively, whew, that was a whole nother game for the Pacers. Honestly, the lowest scoring game of the season at 74 points. Just earlier in the week, Pacers scored 73 points by halftime against the Hawks without their starters. So that just shows how terribly they played. A lot of adjustments are going to need to be made for game two. But if you told me the Pacers would hold the Celtics to 84 points and 36% field goal percentage in game one, I would be confident that the Pacers won that game, and that was not the case.
Yeah, almost a tale of two halves. I mean, first half it was a close game. Pacers up by around 10 or so, 7. Mm-hmm. And then second half sort of went down. So, Tim, what did the Celtics do right in that second half to reverse the shit, change the course of how the game was going?
I think some shots just started falling. As Fachi mentioned, it was a big deal for the Celtics, especially in the win, because it was, I believe, out of 25, this was the 26th time, one to 25, in situations where they've scored less than 86 and won. Last time that they scored under 86 in a game was the Game 7 loss against the Cavs in the Eastern Conference Finals. So the fact that they were able to pull out a win like this in a low-scoring game for both sides was a big deal. As we've said before, it's been a big defensive juggernaut battle so far in the series, and it's just a matter of capitalizing on the other team's mistakes. Celtics had some big shots falling. Jason Tatum, to note, Went 3 for 3 from deep. McMorris provided some really good offense off the bench. Not supremely efficient, but he also was 7 for 9 from free throws. So he provided a kick with 20 points and 7 rebounds off the bench. So you hope to see some good play from him. Al Horford overall was playing great. But it was one of those gritty, gritty games that you see in the playoffs. And especially with a team like the Pacers right now, they were just creating a bunch of turnovers. It was crazy. And I think the real thing was it was just a matter of capitalizing and finishing on those opportunities. There was a couple possessions in the game I remember watching towards the end of the first half and into the second. Where like the Pacers would get this crazy turnover, they get this steal, they make the right pass, they get the shot up, and it just wouldn't fall. And that's really difficult because when you're not able to get that basket open for you and you're still making all those defensive plays, it really takes the wind out of you. And I think that happened for both sides a lot. And I think the Celtics just got hot at the right time and managed to keep momentum going. It'll be really interesting to see after game 2 on Wednesday how that momentum is going to shift on the road. With the most recent road game for the Celtics against the Pacers being a 20-point win, I expect the Pacers home fans to bring it. I'm sure Fauci can attest to that.
Oh, for sure, man. I mean, if the Pacers, if they go down 0-2, it's going to be very, very tough to come back. That third quarter is when everything changed. I think a pivotal moment in that was when Thad Young picked up his third and fourth foul. The third one being with 4 minutes left in the first half, Boston really goes on a run, ends up leading to Terry Rozier hitting that three right before halftime. I think Pacers just, they came out flat after that. Thad Young, he's, every Pacer fan will call him the glue guy because he really does everything. 5 steals, 6 boards, he had 4 assists. He was really just doing everything. But when he came out, the Pacers just, they looked dysfunctional and they couldn't get anything going. Actually, only 2 made baskets in the third quarter. Saddest part, one of them was a goaltending call. So you got to be better than that.
Gotcha. I got a question to ask you, and that's how the Celtics guarded Bogdanovich. It seemed as though him, as well as Tyreke Evans, they were able to isolate those guys, especially on the pick and roll. The defender was jumping in pretty quick on Bogdanovich. He kind of looked rushed on a lot of his shots, didn't look like he could get into rhythm. What do you think needs to change for him to be more successful? And do you see the Celtics being able to continue to defend him? Because it seems like, especially since Oladipo went down, he's your go-to scorer on that team. What does he have to do to kind of up his game and be better in game 2?
Nate McMillan, it starts with Nate McMillan. He's got to be able to draw more plays to get Bogdanovich open looks. You got to set some higher screens. You got to be able to have him come around. I thought that the Celtics did a great job smothering him. Jaylen Brown in specific had played some phenomenal defense on him. Bogdanovich, yes, he is our go-to scorer. Unfortunately, he's better in kind of a number 2 role next to Oladipo, but Oladipo's not going to be walking through that door, so you can't make any excuses. So I think Bogdanovich really has to set the tone early. In the first half, I mean, I believe he took 5 shots. He ended up finishing the game with 12 points, but 7 came in the fourth quarter when the game was already out of hand. So I'm looking for Bogdanovich to be overly aggressive. He ended up with, I think it was 11 shots. But I'm fine if he wants to take, you know, 15, 16 shots. Get yourself in rhythm because we're going to live and die through him. He's got to be able to get it going. And it's just a matter of having the confidence and being aggressive. You mentioned before how Jason Tatum had some open looks. Well, we got to be able to get Bogdanovich some of those open looks because he really wasn't getting any of them. And, you know, shout out to Boston's defense for that. So, Nate McMillan, you got to get crafty. You called a good game defensively. Well, it's time to see what you got on the offensive side of things.
Yeah, speaking of adjustments by McMillan, Pacers run a good amount of time on the court with Sabonis and Turner. And that's one of the two true big men that they use there. They can space the floor a little bit, but not like to the three-point line consistently. How do you feel like they're going to attack that now that Boston is starting Aaron Baines and Al Horford has really kept Turner and Sabonis in check? In game 1, only 5 points for Turner, only 7 points for Sabonis. They got 9 and 8 rebounds respectively. But how do you feel like, do you feel that they're going to go more small ball with Thaddeus Young playing some more minutes, Bogdanovich potentially getting minutes at the 4? How do you feel that they're going to attack that now that Baines is back healthy and a juggernaut on the defensive end?
I got to give Baines credit. I do think, though, that Sabonis needs to be banging in the paint a little bit more. I thought Boston challenged him to shoot some jump shots, and Sabonis took them, and they really weren't falling. I think that he's got to be aggressive down there because I had mentioned on the Setting the Pace podcast that Boston did a great job rebounding in the series against the Pacers, and that was one of my keys was Miles Turner has to win that matchup against Al Horford, and he did not in game one. Once again, the Celtics out-rebounded, and the Pacers, I believe, was by 13. So they settled for way too many jumpers. Miles Turner isn't your typical back-to-the-basket guy who's going to bring it in. He does shoot a lot of jumpers. So you're going to need Sabonis to be kind of the more physical of the group. I don't know if you're going to have to bring in Kylo Quinn for a couple extra minutes, just kind of set the tone, because I could see this being a physical series. It already started with Jaylen Brown kind of shoving Bogdanovich over there, and I would have liked if the Pacers kind of would have been a little bit more chippier back and got involved in that, which was a little disappointing to see that they weren't. So I think we're going to need Sabonis to really kind of get in there. The lineup of Sabonis and Miles Turner was not effective in this game. I believe they scored only 8 points or 9 points in 21 possessions with that lineup. So you got to make a change. And if we're going to play Thad Young at the five, I like it. Because I'm telling you, he could do it all.
Real quick, both teams shot about the same amount of free throws in Sunday's game. I mean, when you have a physical game like this and a physical teams like this, you're going to tend to see that happen. The big difference in that one was Celtics shot 81% from the charity stripe, and you guys only shot 57. Has this been a continuation of a problem all season? Is this one game off kind of thing, or is this a concern for you going forward?
The Pacers were not a good free throw shooting team this year. To start the year, they were terrible at free throws, but they did pick it up, and I do think that the team overall will pick it up. It just kind of seems like, I don't know if everybody had the jitters or if there was just something going on, but I mean, I even watched Doug McDermott go to the line and miss both free throws. I mean, he missed a technical free throw. Stuff like that absolutely can't happen. So I would imagine that's something they're going to be drilling in practice because, you know, McDermott, he's an 82% shooter. So to just miss both of them, I mean, that's you can't have that happen. The team overall, you left 9 points on the board from that. So I would expect this team to definitely fix that. But I think just across the board, he just played a horrible game. I mean, 6 of 27 from 3. He shot 33%. I mean, if the Pacers didn't hold Boston to 36%, this would have looked like an absolute overall just embarrassment. So, you know, oh, man, they need to pick it up from the free throw line, but from the three-point line also, absolutely have to pick it up. Only one made three in the second half.
Yeah, that third quarter really killed Indiana. Only 8 points in that third quarter, opposed to 26 put up for Boston, which was the highest scoring quarter between both teams at 26. Now, Tim, let me ask you, this is the first playoff action we've seen with Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving in the lineup. What did you see of Gordon and Kyrie in their first playoff game in green and white?
They seem to both bring the energy. I think it's been a long time we've all waited for it to happen, to see these two on the court together. And I think I think the energy in the Garden was really brought up just because we had these two guys back in green, and for the first time together, playing in the playoffs together was a big deal. I think it's a matter of time before they really get going. I think this first game one, as we were saying, is just absolutely grit and grind basketball. It'll be really interesting to see once we get some momentum going and they start knocking down those shots at a higher clip. You know, we still saw a little bit of Kyrie being Kyrie. He's still looking for those shots, obviously, as we were saying before, too. Indy really did a great job defending him, holding him 6 for 17. Hayward didn't really shoot well either, kind of shooting mediocre from the field, but I also think it was a game one that was just heavily marked by defense and forcing really, really hard turnovers. So it'll be interesting to see if the energy changes at all going into Wednesday. I expect both teams had probably been putting in some serious hours in the gym trying to learn how to knock down shots again. And we'll see how that transfers over into game two. I think the offenses really need to bring it. And who knows, maybe we'll end up getting a shootout But there's a couple really good knockdown shooters on both sides. So I'm hoping we see Kyrie come out. I'm hoping we see Bogdanović come out, and we'll see what else comes to fruition from that.
Yeah, I mean, I do not expect another output of this magnitude or lacking magnitude. 74-84 is not the score I feel like anyone envisioned. I feel like it's just, like you said, just first game jitters. You know, it's the first playoff game of the season. You know, I don't expect these teams to throw out 130 every game, but 75 and 85 around that range isn't what we're going to see. Because Boston has too much talent. Indiana has, you know, players that can score in a good system and to get them buckets. But let's look ahead to game two. Where do you see – we'll throw this one to John first. John, how do you envision game two going, still in the Garden?
I envision this obviously being a lot higher scoring game. I mean, that's not to say too much, like we have just already discussed about how poorly both of these teams shot. I think Tatum's going to get it going again. You know, Kyrie, I think he was trying to do a little bit too much. It's his first game, like we said, with Hayward. There's been a lot of questions. He's been the one that's been, you know, the most outspoken about, you know, the regular season at the end didn't really matter. It's all about the playoffs. I think he put a little bit too much pressure on himself. I would like to see, you know, Jaylen Brown. I understand that he had, you know, the biggest defensive assignment in this game, but he's got to shoot better. He's got to drive to the lane. He's got to be aggressive. I know Miles Turner is probably one of, you know, top five, if not one of the best defenders in the paint, but he's got to attack the basket more. And I think also, you know, getting Marcus Morris again, getting him going. He seems to be doing a lot better off the bench lately. He's definitely turned it back on the last month of the season. I see him getting a little bit more rotation. I see his energy playing up again. And I also think that now with that game out of the way, Hayward's going to really surprise us in the second game. I bold prediction, I think he's going to have over 20 points in the next game.
I like
good
it.
Good prediction. Fauci, how do you see game two going? Do you try and think they're going to tie up the series going back to the field house?
You absolutely have to. The Pacers have been a pretty rough road team as of late, but it's now or never to break those road woes. And you have to come out aggressive. I mean, you honestly can't come out worse than you did. I mean, not to say the first quarter. The Pacers played very good in the first quarter. But you have to be – if this didn't make you fired up, if this doesn't get you ready to say, hey, back's against the wall, then you're not going to last long. Because I want to see – a guy like Miles Turner, you know, last year he got fired up after he was called soft by a teammate. I don't know who's going to have to be the one to do it, but someone's got to call him soft right now because he needs to come out and be aggressive. He proclaimed himself Defensive Player of the Year. Well, I want to see it. Just one block in the last game. I really need to see him win that matchup against Horford. Otherwise, it's going to be tough for the Pacers. I saw Darren Collison miss a lot of wide open jumpers. I think it just was not Indiana's day. I think they're going to hit some shots that they normally hit. I expect both teams to be scoring a lot more points. I'm imagining probably both teams are scoring, you know, a little over 100 points each. I could see maybe a 110 to 105, something like that. But it's now or never for the Pacers, and I think that it all starts with the Pacers' bigs really getting it going. Miles Turner and Sabonis have to win those matchups against Baines and Horford. It's as simple as that.
All right, Tim, how do you see this one going?
Personally, for me, I agree with those lines of scoring. It might be, I want to say, maybe like 100 to 84 Celtics. I think they're going to get a little bit of space. I do think the one thing that we'll be deciding is, as we were talking, as Fauci was mentioning, the matchups with Miles Turner and Sabonis. I think those two situations is going to be a matter of Sabonis and Turner stretching the floor. I think Baines is a really good interior defender. Outside of the paint, he's gotten a lot better. He's in a lot better shape and slimmed down, at least from my opinion, how I've seen him play and what he looks like physically. But I don't think he's as good a defender from the perimeter, from range, as Al Horford. So if you can try and expose the mismatch there, try and get some looks, get some cuts, kick out to the jumper, anything you can do to get the bigs going, because at the end of the day right now, you've got a couple guys who can shoot from the wing, but unless you get that matchup in the paint one, it's going to make it a lot more difficult to open up the rest of the offense. The one thing that the Celtics have going defensively for them is they have so many different wings they can throw at you defensively that it just it becomes an absolute task trying to get your best shooters open, which happen to be Tyreke Evans, Bogdanovich, and those guys are key focal points of your offense right now if you're the Pacers, and the best way to do that is getting your big men going. But that being said, I think Boston takes this game 2-win and goes up 2-0 against Indy, and it just becomes a battle of the Bulls for the rest of the series.
And definitely, I think it's going to be a decent series. I think Indiana could potentially get two. I do like their team, obviously, Oladipo being out and taking away that go-to star and borderline superstar in the league. He's an absolute fantastic talent. Really hurts in the playoffs, but I feel like with the system that Indiana has and the players they have and the role players they have with them, as well as, like Patrick was mentioning, the road woes for Indiana, that's been a theme for the Celtics as well. I could see Celtics getting two here and then dropping two and then going to, you know, oh shit mode. The next question I want to ask for Fauci, how do you take advantage of the loss of Marcus Smart, obviously not playing in this series most likely and probably will be out for round two if you make it that far. How do you attack, even though it's not necessarily a weakness because Jaylen Brown is still a pretty good wing defender, what do you want to see the Pacers do to take advantage of not having Marcus Smart out there for the Celtics?
The Pacers have to be making Kyrie Irving work and tire himself out. And part of that starts with Darren Collison getting it going. Collison has to get it going on offense because Wesley Matthews is a guy who, in the beginning, he started out pretty hot. He had 8 points in the first quarter. He didn't score again. So you have the guards of Indiana really have to make Kyrie Irving work for it. Luckily, you guys do have that luxury of being able to throw out Jaylen Brown, who, as I mentioned, I gave a ton of props to before on the defensive side. So Kyrie Irving, I mean, he's a guy it's everybody knows just how good he is. But if you can tire him out and you can force more shooting games like the 6 of 17 that we saw, hey, we'll take that every day because you want to force Boston's other guys to beat you because Kyrie seems like the most obvious answer. So I'd say it's the guard play of Indiana. Darren Collison, we saw how many open jumpers he had. I'm telling you, if he will not be missing those again, because if he is, he won't be playing much more. Corey Joseph played a real good game. I'm not going to get carried away because Corey Joseph had been in a very large shooting slump. So it was impressive to see the game that he had. I hope he didn't unfortunately waste it because that's a guy that could be a pretty good X factor. But a guy like Tyreke Evans, when he comes in, I mean, there's two different Tyreke Evans. There's the good Tyreke Evans, which basically hasn't been seen this year. He was seen for about 5 minutes the game yesterday. And then there's the bad Tyreke Evans that'll kind of just continuously just shoot the ball and take it and not really look for anyone else. The same one who finished with the lowest field goal percentage in the paint this year. So the guards of Indiana have to make the Boston Celtics guards work for it, as in Kyrie Irving. But make no mistake about it, I cannot come on this podcast and not predict a Pacers win. You have to come back, otherwise we're dead meat. So yes, I am projecting the Pacers to come back and steal one in Boston and change this series.
Yeah, you said the bad Tyreke Evans is shooting and shooting and shooting and not looking for anyone else. It reminds me of a Celtics player that I'm very fond of, Terry Rozier. Tim, how is Terry's role going to impact this series?
He's got to pick up the slack that is left by Marcus Smart's absence. I don't think he's going to be able to do that on the defensive side of the ball. We saw that a little bit, especially one particular play where Bogdanovich was driving to the hoop, and Rozier tries to meet him to give him a foul and just gives him an absolute gimme foul, and he gets the and-one, so he's going to get exposed defensively, whether you like it or not, just because he's an undersized guard. He doesn't have a ton of length to him. He doesn't have a large wingspan or anything like that. So the best you can do is hope that he takes the right shots, makes the smart plays. He's not forcing looks or anything like that. And hopefully he doesn't get in the habit of trying to chuck up those threes at the end of quarters or anything like that. Getting lucky on that three-pointer was a big momentum swing, but you can't always be taking shots like that. You got to look for the, you know, best shot possible, best open man. But, you know, I said it on our last podcast, but, you know, this is his opportunity right now. He had a really mediocre to terrible season, and he needs to capitalize on the opportunity he's got right now, especially with Smart out. This is his moment to shine. This is the time to be putting in some serious work, putting in, you know, that value minutes that you need from a guy at his position. And if he's trying to get paid this summer, that's the best way to do it. Play some smart, hard basketball and show everyone why you're so scary.
Yeah, and also another thing rotation-wise for the Celtics, opting to keep Marcus Morris Sr. on the bench, which is something we haven't seen in the later half of the season ever since the two Marcus lineup that was implemented around the second or third week of the season, where we had that good like 10-game winning streak or around there, like 10 of our last 12 when the Marcuses entered. Marcus Morris Sr. has been a fixture in the starting lineup. John, Brad Stevens opted for Jaylen Brown instead and also Aaron Baines. How is Marcus Morris's role on the bench going to have to be different than his role in the starting lineup that we've seen?
I think he did an excellent job. You know, he was probably one of our top three best players on the team the first half of the season. He was a consistent scorer, played decent defense, was a high energy guy, and then, you know, midway through the season to the third quarter of the season, he just didn't have it for some reason. And I think putting him on the bench and not giving him that responsibility to begin the game kind of loosens him up a little bit. He's a very emotional player. I mean, on extreme positive ways and sometimes in his own way. As Celtics fans, we know that. We've seen it. You know, he misses his first couple of shots, especially when he was starting. He starts to put pressure on himself, tries to do too much, and then we get bad Marcus Morris. So I think coming off the bench for him and knowing that, okay, he gets to go up against that second rotation of the Pacers, it's a little bit easier for him to score, a little bit easier for him to get more spacing, use his body and athleticism. I think that's going to work out a lot more for him versus starting, especially on the defensive side of the ball. I think Aaron Baines is the guy that needs to start. You know, he's not going to score as much as Morris, but I think Morris likes the fact that he could be that go-to guy in that second rotation.
And do you think this is more of a permanent switch for the playoffs? Do you feel like Marcus Morris Sr. is going to be delegated to that bench role for the rest of the time, or do you think this is more of a matchup issue or more of a matchup preference with the Pacers?
Well, you know, towards the end of the season, they even started bringing him off the bench a little bit more. And I think that was in preparation for the playoffs. Everybody's healthy. I mean, obviously, Marcus Smart not being there for at least the first two rounds, you know, kind of puts a damper on that, but with everybody being healthy. But I think this is going to be a definite permanent fixture. I think Stevens, especially with the teams that we're probably going to have to play, whether it's, you know, if we can get past the Pacers this round, we're going to have to face the Bucks probably. I think he likes that interior defense of Aaron Baines coming out in the game. And like I said before, I think his scoring coming in that second rotation does a lot more. We don't, you know, necessarily have that right now, the big. I think that's going to do a lot for us. And I think he's going to keep him there as long as he's successful.
All right, Fauci, who do you think is the biggest X factor for your Pacers if you want to advance to the second round?
It depends on what you mean X factor. If by X factor, I'm going to go with in regards to like maybe of a sleeper, it's got to be Wesley Matthews' defense. And if he can give us one game with 20 points, I think that's the game that the Pacers win. His defense is going to be huge. But make no mistake, the Pacers will not have any chance to win this series unless Miles Turner or Sabonis really step up. Bogdanovich, it's just assumed, like, you have to be the leading scorer for the Pacers. So that's the problem with this team. They don't have much of a go-to guy. You have about five guys or so that could give you 15 on a night. So for the X factor, it could be across the board. I'm going to say that Sabonis has to take off. He has to. If he's not playing, honestly, amongst the best that he's played this season, it's not going to happen. So I'll go with Sabonis. If not, Wesley Matthews, just because it's known Bogdanovich has to get it going.
Yep. Tim, how about your sleeper for the Celtics for this, or your X factor for the Celtics in this playoff series?
I think it's either Hayward or Tatum. I think right now, based on the play so far, originally we talked on the pod the other day, before the first game one, I was looking at the matchup and saying, hey, if Tatum's not healthy enough, you're going to see Gordon start. But Tatum went in, he shot 3 for 3 from three. He contributed. He was playing sound defense, making the right passes. I think, personally for me, the wing spot is really the Celtics' strength. It's always been their strength. And because they've got so many bodies coming off the bench with, you know, Morris now coming off the bench, he dropped 20 in the game, and you've got Hayward coming back, it's going to leave gaps in the defense for other players to exploit. So it's like a matter between, I think, Hayward or Tatum. Whoever's not getting covered is going to be getting buckets. So it's kind of a pick your poison at the 3, 4, and 5. But I personally think it's between Tatum and Hayward, and I think it's going to be a coin flip any given night.
John, same question for you. Who do you think the X factor is for the C's?
It's the same guy that I've been saying all year. It's got to be Hayward. You know, I feel so bad for him because every single time that it seemed like he was really starting to get going, he had an injury. You know, he had the concussion. And then he had another injury. And then at the end of the season, he really started to step up his game offensively and defensively. I think he's done adequately on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, he's never going to be that shutdown guy. He's never going to be Marcus Smart-esque, but I think he can hold his own on that side of the ball. But we didn't pay him all that money to play defense, right? We paid him all that money to be able to score and to be able to create for others. I mean, he still, you know, his line was small, but he still put up, you know, 7 rebounds, 10 points, 4 assists. If he can get it going and he can be the Gordon Hayward that we saw, especially when he was healthy towards the end of the season, where he was putting up 15, 17 plus points, shooting an ungodly awesome, you know, field goal percentage, then honestly, I don't think the Pacers have a chance because, like, you know, Tim had said, it's your if all the guys are running and they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, it's pick your poison. And unfortunately for the Pacers, they don't have Oladipo. They don't have that go-to guy. I don't think they can keep up with the scoring if this team gets hot. And if you have a guy like Hayward with that talent, if he's healthy and he's really playing at the top of his game, then I think this is going to be a very dangerous Celtics team.
All right, Fauci, how do you see the series ending up? Do you see your Pacers moving on, or do you see your team meeting its unfortunate end for the season?
Well, hey, if you're going to ask me after we scored 74 points on 33% field goal percentage, I don't see anything too positive about that. Coming into this series, I initially thought, after hearing the Marcus Smart injury, that this could go 6 if everything went right. Could go 7. I did think they would be in favor of Boston. I'm going to need to see something big time in game 2 to think any different than maybe even a 5-game series in Boston's favor. So if the Pacers don't come out hot and really set the tone and steal home court, then yeah, this is going to be over in 5. So I'm going to go with Pacers come back. They bounce back, win 102-99. We'll take it from there. If Pacers go down in game 2, this series is over in 5.
Tim, how do you see it ending?
Celtics in 5. I think Pacers will at least win one game at home. I'm hoping if they do win a game at home, it's game 3. Celtics win game 4 and take all that momentum back to TD Garden to wrap it up. I just don't see the series going on crazy long, just based off the way it was in the past couple games between the Pacers and the Celtics. Obviously, the health of Marcus Smart and having him not in your lineup is huge. I just don't think that either team can keep the shooters down like they have in this game 1. I just think it's a matter of time before these teams kick up the offense. And as John was saying, I don't think that the Pacers can keep up with the Celtics offensively. They're both really strong coached and well defensive teams, but I just don't Yeah, I think the Celtics take it in five just based on their offense and the weapons they've got.
All right, John, where do you see the series? How do you see the series ending, and where do you see it going? And who do you have going on in the next round?
Oh, man. Well, I definitely see the Celtics going in the next round. I think they're going to beat the Pacers. Now, the determination of how many games that's going to be, I think there's a couple factors. One, and they fixed it in the second half, but it was scary in the first half. And we've had this problem all season, is letting too many offensive rebounds and second-chance points. The one positive that the Pacers did do in that game, I think they outscored the Celtics by 12 points in the paint. You can't let that happen. You can't let those second. You could play great defensively and get them to take that bad jump shot, but if you're not getting that rebound, if you're not pulling down those boards and you're letting them get those second half points, especially with a guy like Miles Turner, who, if, as he said, gets a spark under his ass, could be a problem. Now, if we're able to continue to play what we did defensively and those X factors do come up, like, hey, where did I see this going five? If we continue to have our lapses on the offensive side of the ball when it comes to turnovers and the continuation of having problems winning on the road, this, I could easily see this series going seven games. This Pacers team, and you guys can comment on this, but this Pacers team reminds me a lot of the Celtics team last year. Real gritty, can play defense. Like he had said, you know, you don't have that go-to scorer like Oladipo anymore, but you have a bunch of guys that can get you 15 points. And I could easily see this going seven games, but my gut's telling me five.
Yeah, I'm with Tim. I see five. I think Pacers get game three at home. Like I said, with the road struggles for both teams, it's not going to, I feel like each team will have at least, I think Pacers will get a game at home. With a passionate crowd that is the Indiana crowd, as Indiana's basketball is huge in Indiana, that's a thing. So I feel like the crowd will get Pacers going game three. I feel like the Celtics will take Wednesday. I feel like they'll take the next two after game three. And, anything else anyone has to add?
How nervous would you be if we lose both games in Indiana and it's 2-2 coming back?
I personally wouldn't be too nervous.
Take care of business at home. That's all it waters down to.
You know, like I said, with the struggles of the Celtics this season on the road, I think they're like the third worst team on the road. If you look at all 16 playoff teams, I think they were barely over 500, if not under 500. But I think if we lose both in Indiana, I feel like that's when like Kyrie Irving has the let's chill out talk, you know. I feel like that will be a true test of leadership of Kyrie. Everyone's been talking about it all season. Is he a leader? Is he a good one? Is he a bad one? Of this, that, the other thing. I feel like if we lose both games in Indiana, which we very well might. I mean, I feel like Indiana is a good team. I just think the Celtics team is going to get past this Pacers team, at least this version of the Pacers team. With Oladipo, I feel like this is more of a series. But I feel like that would be a true test of leadership. But I feel like if we lose two, I feel like we don't lose another game this series. I feel like a max six-game series.
Hey, I didn't come on this podcast to make any excuses. So, hey, there is no Oladipo. He will not be walking through that building. But the same point, you know, we got to deal the hand that we're dealt. And I think that the Pacers are going to come out to play in game two. And you know that crowd is going to be rocking in game three. So you have to steal one in Boston in order to have any chance to win this series. And it starts with the game on Wednesday. So the Pacers are going to come out. They're going to be aggressive, and you got to be ready to fight. Because coming into this series, Pacer fans thought one of the biggest advantages was hoping that maybe Boston could stop themselves, hoping that they would kind of internally beef a little bit, and it starts with putting some pressure on them. If you can't do that, then the Celtics will win this, hands down.
Yeah, well, we'd like to thank you for coming on. And Fauci, tell us a little bit about your podcast before we end it off today.
Sure thing. So we are Setting the Pace. That's where you can find us on Twitter @SettingThePace3. Always your go-to stop for Indiana Pacer basketball. We're doing some awesome interviews. We actually have Trevor Booker coming on the show tomorrow to talk about the Pacers-Celtics series. You know, he knows firsthand what it's like playing for Coach McMillan and playing with his with this pretty much exact Pacers team. So we always have some really fun interviews over there, whether it's past NBA players or guests like Keith Smart, who covers sometimes the Celtics. He's a big Celtics fan on Yahoo Sports. So you never know who's going to pop up on Setting the Pace. And we look forward to kind of hearing about you guys, if you have any questions. And I definitely had a great time coming on your podcast today and chatting with you.
Yeah, well, you heard it here first. Setting the Pace podcast, NBA former NBA player on there. They'll be recording that tomorrow, so stay tuned for that. That's going to be great. Well, for John, for Tim, and for Fauci, we thank you guys for tuning into the Celtics Pulse podcast. As you remember, go check out Thrive Fantasy. Go check out Podcoin. Links in the bios. Follow us on Twitter at Celtics Pulse on Twitter. And so thank everyone for watching, and we'll see you guys next time.
Sounds great. Go Celtics.
Cheers. Let's go Pacers.